This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we've got a lot to discuss here this week, and I'm going to present to you not a twofer, but a threefer. You're going to get three for the same low, low price of free. So you'll get a lot of stuff to enjoy this week. Anyhow, while I was at the Magi Fest this year, 2019, I had an opportunity to chat with some people who were just kind of hanging out, which I thought was kind of cool. So these two podcasts actually were originally intended to be part of the content I was going to be delivering as one of the daily updates from the convention floor. As it happened that we started getting into a longer conversation, I thought, well, this could perhaps flesh out to be a full 1 hour podcast. But as it happened, each of them were less than a half hour, so that's why I'm putting the two together here. One was with Stan Allen, who was just hanging out. It was kind of cool just to see him doing nothing. He always is behind the scenes, it seems like, at his own Magic Live convention, or he is involved as a performer, lecturer, or something, but this is one of the first times, if not the first time, in which he actually was just hanging out as a registrant, and just really enjoying himself and getting a chance to, I mean, he just seems so open and free and just relaxed, I guess is the word. And as we were talking, then it just so happened, boy, as timing would have it, we were talking about being critical of conventions and some talent and et cetera, et cetera. And we talked about people who are critics within our industry and the lack of critics we had. I said, well, no, we don't, because there's one right now. There's Jamie in Swiss. So Jamie came over and we chatted. So that's what kind of made up this first one. So later in the evening, I saw Tom Gagnon, who many of you know then, of course, being a great card expert and illustrator then as well. And so I sat down with him for a little while and started chatting then as well. So anyhow, there are a couple of great podcasts individually here that I think it's you're going to enjoy. And then afterwards, if we have some time, I'm going to add at the end a couple of reviews from some tricks from Murphy's Magic Supplies. So I'm going to introduce, first of all, the first of the two podcasts right here, featuring Stan Allen and Jamie in Swiss here on The Magic Word. All right, Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast here again.
Wait,
and as we're walking
say
around,
Scotty in?
No, I don't say Scotty. It's Scotty out, but I don't say Scott.
Scotty out's really dumb. Don't you say Scotty in? Because I mean, doesn't that balance out?
No.
Okay,
fine. You get in and out. I'm Scotty in and Scotty out.
This isn't what you wanted to talk about.
No,
was
I think that's perfectly appropriate for you, because you were the person who's always busting my chops about that.
I am,
and I love that, because you're not going to do that, are you? Oh, you
no,
did.
No, I'm not going to, and I'm not going to bust your chops at all. So this
a little
will
bit
never
lower
make it.
This
will never make it on
busting
air.
Okay, so...
Well, when it's low-hanging fruit like that, don't be ridiculous.
Stan Allen, with former Magic Magazine editor. Now the...
Now that I'm not an editor, I can say
now the conventions are. Now you can.
There's no fun
here
in Columbus.
Well, no fun. So the guy who's in there right now, Adam...
Adam Rubin.
Rubin was at Magic Live. Was it last year?
He was. He was a columnist in the magazine for a year. He's a bright guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Yeah. I like Adam.
And I like what he was talking about. Again, it's the same kind of lecture. It looked like some of the same slides and things and the things he was...
Impossible objects.
Impossible objects.
Oh, yeah. He's just... I talk to him and I feel stupid.
Was he an ad agency guy?
He was.
Okay.
Because
you said he was a creative guy, and I thought that was
probably... He was a creative guy. I think out of Chicago, then he moved to New York, and now he lives over in Europe.
Oh, yeah, he's in Barcelona. That's right. He's in that right now.
Yeah.
There was supposed to be some guy, I think, here also, who is a magician that was a concentration camp survivor. Did you hear that?
I don't know that.
Okay. I thought I read that on the website. I may not have, but I thought that what I heard was that, you know, when he was a child, he kind of stayed alive by doing magic.
Right. I know that there was a book by William Rauscher about a concentration
camp
survivor.
Magicians.
Yeah, which is pretty dang amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what keeps you alive in that scenario, but anybody who can, wow.
Yeah. So, are you just checking out to see if there's some ideas here at this convention or yours? Or?
Oh, yeah, I'm just here stealing. So
that's what you're all about.
Yeah, I shoplifted a little in the dealer's room last night.
I'm going to steal all Juan Tamaris's moves. I'm going to do his moves now. Yeah, because they're easy.
Well, I knew his book sold out, but he didn't actually sell out.
I don't need a stinking book.
You got a case of them.
I don't need a book. I just watch him and do it. It's like Mozart and the symphonies. You know, come on, it's easy.
That's right.
No, you know what's funny is we're working a lot this year about, for Magic Live, the experience of a customer.
Okay.
And we're trying to think the whole convention through the eyes of the customer. Mm-hmm. And the customer, the guest. And I mean, it's like family, these people come.
It's like what Disney say, they call them guests.
They call them guests, but we're starting to call them family members.
Yeah.
You know, there is that weird uncle. Well, let's not go there. But that's the problem. That's why I wasn't going to go there, Scott. Thanks a lot.
It's okay, uncle.
All right, standing out. But we're thinking more and more about the family of Magic Live, and that we consider the convention sort of a family reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And in thinking, we want to think through the eyes of the guest. And I realized I hadn't been a guest at a magic convention in a long time.
Oh, I guess that's right.
And so I said...
Because when you go to a convention, a lot of times you're actually emceeing or
doing
something.
I'm either working or something else, and I'm an absolute lazy bum here. And I'm just experiencing the convention. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do a couple more this year and just see... You know
what that experience is like as
absolutely.
A registrar to kind of hang out and have time to talk. Because a lot of times when you are at a convention and you're working or in your dealer room or something, it is grueling and takes a lot of time, but you also don't have time to kind of sit like this and chat with somebody.
You know, it's like when people say to you, oh, you must know all of the secrets. And it's hard to explain to somebody that, no, we know basic secrets, but when we watch a magician, we don't watch a magician the same way you watch a magician.
Mm-hmm.
What do? Well, I'm a plumber. I said, well, I could turn the water on. Water comes out. But you'll say, oh, no, see that little air bubble there? See this thing? And you'll know all about that plumbing I won't know anything about.
That's right.
Magicians just know more, so they watch a magician not with layman eyes. They watch them with magician's eyes. And if you throw conventions, and you have thrown conventions, so you know this, your tendency when you go to a convention is to say, let's see, this room's a little crowded. How many people? Are they past capacity? I wonder what they paid for this. And your mind is just going through it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to pull yourself out of that and to say, no, I'm just here to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And to just
it's
later.
Not my responsibility.
Later on the plane going home, I'm going to write up, why did I enjoy that? What was fun about that? What was good about that? And in some cases, we can't scale that up to 1,600 people, you know. And in other cases, we can scale it if we pay attention.
I was talking to Xavier Spade yesterday, and he was saying one of the things he likes about this is the sessioning that people do out here of all ages and everything. It's part of it. And, in fact, I know Joshua Jay's belief is, as an organizer, is that's part of the experience. In other words, that you're not paying for that, but you should. You know, when you come in the front door, the convention begins. And I kind of like that. This hotel is all us. And that's one of the difficult things, certainly with what you're doing with Magic Live, because the hotel is a casino and there are other guests and everything. But when you come in here like this...
I hear they have games.
It's
I didn't know.
I think they do. Occasionally.
But you know what? It's true. If you go to FISM, FISM, and I'm saying this in a very broad term,
mm-hmm.
FISM is a magic competition with a convention wrapped around it.
Good way of putting it. Yeah.
Blackpool is a dealer's room with a convention wrapped around it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I sort of feel this place is a sessioning crowded bar and lobby packed in at night with a convention wrapped around it.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have grown up at Magi Fest, Williamson, I think Josh came out of this plane, other people, they've been coming for years.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, because they are attracted to that session and the magic convention around it. This sounds awful. I don't mean it awful. The convention doesn't get in the way of the fun time.
Right,
but I would disagree.
Right.
You pay for all of it. That to create, you can't create that session.
Correct.
But you create the elements in place and put everything into place, and that all costs money for that session to happen. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
That's
what we
point.
Call community.
Yes.
We can't create community, but we create the elements that will allow community to create itself organically.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Because what he was going on to say, I was asking about the TAOM when we had it in Houston last year. He said it was a great convention, but he said the one thing I didn't like was you didn't have place for people to session. And there were just a few small tables, and it really was not really very conducive to allowing for sessioning.
Well, it's also hard because we have a lounge. We could double the size of the lounge. We could quadruple the size of the lounge, and maybe we should. But the fact is if you go into a big, giant room, and there's nothing but empty tables and just a couple people, that's not conducive to
that's
it.
True. Mm-hmm.
We used to do a dealer's room where on Sunday night we had these extra pods open within it, areas that then we could close off the rest of the week. Because you want it crowded, but you don't want it too crowded. But you don't want it empty either.
That's true.
Because that's not a buying
exactly
kind of a thing. Sessioning, it can't be too crowded, but it can't be too empty.
Well, that one that you have where that I like the bicycle playing cards, you know,
yeah,
it's got
lounge.
A little the lounge in there.
Yeah.
It's a nice size, I think, because I don't think you should expand that. I mean, that always seems to be the right size. I don't see a lot of people standing around the tables. If there were, then maybe you do need to expand it.
I think there are moments. We actually have a time-lapse camera shooting pictures every hour. And the idea
in that room?
And the idea is to just be able to say, 2 o'clock in the morning, there's 500 people in
X
this
number,
room.
Right.
We need a bigger room at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I see. Okay.
You know, it's for us to tweak little things to give everybody there the opportunity to have that experience.
Right.
And that's really what Magic Live's all about. I mean, we've never been able to find a silver bullet to fix any problem. It's
right.
all been a series of little things.
Each year gets a little bit better.
Yeah.
But you also try
hope.
Different things, yeah.
Oh, we try things all the time.
As you said, you know, that people like to watch you try to walk that tight wire.
Yeah. I think it's become a slack wire as I get older. But, you know, slack wires are harder to walk
they're
on.
Hard, they're
you
hard.
Know?
They're hard.
No, I think that's what, that's what I think our art should be about. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to go to the lecture where the guy's trying something crazy.
You do. You want something
you do. Well, yeah. Don't you want to go to the convention where you're trying something crazy?
That's true. I agree
not
with that.
Not everything. Not
right.
everything, but let's
but
just
hit,
have
man,
one or two.
Be great.
Yeah, I mean.
But here's some things that are memorable. Let's
yes.
say, for an example, that when they had that cut in half lady, you know, that was the theme.
We did
of the
show of the show. Yeah, documentary.
That was memorable.
Live,
you know,
yeah.
and different people that you have as speakers.
Nobody
that
remembers the name of that show. They all call it the Sawing Show.
Sawing Show, okay.
And even, I think Mike Cavanini's book said the wrong name. He hosted it and wrote the show.
Yeah.
The show, I titled it, was Divided We Stand.
Okay. That's too clever.
It's too clever. So that's the other thing. Don't be too smart. Too clever for the room.
Don't think it too. Don't overthink this.
No, but I think that sometimes you try something clever, like when we brought in Juan Varela and his From the Dark. And we blindfolded everybody. And they experienced the magic show through their sound and touch. And it was very polarized. There were people that thought it was the most amazing thing they'd ever not seen.
Yes.
And other
yeah.
people said, oh, it's just simple, stupid, self-working tricks. And you go, okay, I think you're missing something in there, in that the concept here. But that's fine. To me, they go to the bar afterwards and argue about it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what we're here for?
That's right.
And at the end of the day, a couple people went away and said, no, I'm rethinking how I do magic now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah, we don't always get it, but we shoot for it.
On a related subject, it was a similar kind of a thing in which that I have, I recently bought Balance, you know, of Joshua Jay's, you know, with the everything. And I've got a personal presentation, and I love it, but I've started a thread on Facebook where the different people are saying, well, it's not for me, it's too obvious, it should do this or should do that. You know, my comment is pretty much, well, it's not for you. You know, it is for me, but not for you, and there are certain tricks, I think, and parts of a convention that people are going to like or don't like, and I think that's all fine, too. It's, as Eugene said, it's a room, big house with many rooms.
You know, it's amazing. I go to Penn and Teller's show occasionally, and I think they're artists. And as artists, they're going to keep pushing things. Some of them I'm going to love. Some of them I'm probably going to go, ugh. Why do they do that? And then some are in the middle probably too.
Yeah.
But I think as artists, we should be good with that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm okay. I used to tell people, if you love everything in our magazine, crap, we're not doing something right.
I remember you told me before that it's
we
nice to get
pissing
to
you off somewhere. In
somewhere,
this thing.
Yeah. Please tell us.
If
yeah.
we're not pissing you off, then we're not pushing hard enough.
Yeah.
You know, and tell us. That's the whole idea. The best thing we could have is honest conversation, just saying, you know what, I think you screwed up there.
And it also pushes the art forward. I mean, you can look at some art, for an example, that's abstract art of whatever, and they're going to say, well, that is ridiculous. Before long, that becomes the norm and acceptable, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it could very well be. But if, I don't know, I think magic gets stuck. And I think it partially gets stuck because we don't have paid reviewers. We don't have paid critics.
Hmm.
Critics of magic are our friends, and our fellow magicians, because we're such a small...
They don't like to upset people, because you're going to have to talk to them.
And nobody wants to write, honestly, because, they're my friend, or I lose business, or whatever.
And I see that, but, when I wrote a few things for the convention column for you, I'd had some...
Yeah, and everybody hates you now.
There are quite a few people, that still
don't like
me.
It's fair,
Because I was a little too honest. And, I remember years ago writing a review for Bill Larson for the Presto show of Ab Dixon's, and there were some things I didn't like about the show. It seems like that the dancers weren't together, whatever, and found out later, apparently he hires dancers at each theater in the city he goes to, but they really hadn't been rehearsed enough. There are a few other things because of that didn't go well, and I pointed that out. The point is, when Bill had published that in Genie Magazine, I said, who wrote this? I mean, I could see this, whole blocks and sentences were taken out, they were reworded, and then I found out, because the Presto show was going to be in the It's Magic show coming up, and so he was selling tickets.
Well, Bill, you have to understand, Bill Larson not only loved magic.
Oh, with a passion.
He loved magicians.
Yeah.
And I think Bill was the making friends kind of guy. He wanted to make friends.
Jamie and Swiss. Jamie is not afraid. He's a guy.
And Swiss.
He has
what the hell? Not about anybody. The two of us.
Someone who is critical.
That's what happens when you leave the door open.
We're just talking about being critical.
Magic is held back because, my humble opinion, is that we don't have paid critics, that we don't have people outside our own circle that can say whatever the hell they want about our art, which occasionally we don't want to hear, but we should hear.
Yeah, I think criticism...
Notice how I handed that off to you.
Oh, great. And now he's running away.
I said the good stuff. He's going to tell you everything that's
right,
wrong.
Right. Well, it's good. I should critique Magic Magazine now. Oh, no, wait. But seriously, actually, I think criticism... Many aspects of criticism are part of the problem you're talking about. The lack of outside critics, yes. But the lack of interest in internal critics. I mean, let's face it. I'm a critic, right, in the magic world, okay? The reason that you see... 1,000, 1,500 word book reviews in Magic today is actually because of me, for better or for worse, but that was not done before because I took my model from the New York Review of Books or the New York Times Book Review, the New Yorker.
So there's that.
But also, I think, and I was just talking to someone about this yesterday, in the theater, if you're an actor, from day one that a fundamental part of your process is so-called notes, which is critique. Critique is an integral part of the process. Actors know how to give notes. Actors know how to take notes. It's alien in the magic world. And it definitely does not happen in the magic clubs.
Right.
Right?
I had a creative writing teacher that said, one of the important things you have to learn is how to accept criticism as a writer. And so we said, all right, how do you accept criticism? And his philosophy was, you immediately thank them for it, because it's not always easy to give. And some people love to just piss you off. But those people, you go, dismiss them. They don't care. They don't count. But the person who sincerely wants to give you criticism, that's not easy. And they're risking something. So be sincere in thanking them. And then hang it in a closet in your brain for a day. And maybe a second day. And by around the second or third day, you're going to look in the closet and a lot of stuff has fallen onto the floor. Ignore that. But a couple things are still going to be hanging there that are sort of gnawing at you.
Right.
Said that's what you have to now give some serious thought to.
That's a great metaphor, and I agree with all of that, except for the fact that I would not misread that to say that people should be encouraged to volunteer criticism that is not asked for.
Not in our field, because that's not what we do.
I think criticism has to be asked for. And even when I'm asked for it, I don't just provide it. I make sure that this person asking actually wants it.
Well, that's it. I think
they're willing and open to do something about it.
Because very often that so-called request is actually a request for a compliment.
Well, that's a good point. Clark Crandall said that, and said when people ask you for their opinion, lie.
Lie.
Because they really want you just to agree with them.
Right.
But something that some of us, Mike Cavan and myself and a few other guys from that group, sort of started doing was when people would say, well, what did you think? Find out more information before you offer.
Yes.
What are you going to do with this? I work at the factory, and I'm just going to take it and show it to my friends.
What was your intent? What did you have in your mind?
In that case, let me show you one little twist, and we're good to go. And the other one is, no, I'm going to launch this on television. It's going to make my career. Well, then sit down. Because we're going to have a conversation.
Right. And the best magic communities are those in which criticism is a fundamental part of it, whether it's a great magic store like Denny and Lee's, or if at Monday Night Magic, where we've mentored a couple of a generation or more of magicians, and those are the ones that were always talk about this. There were some young magicians who would come in, do their act, and leave. when there was literally 200 years of performance experience sitting in the dressing room, right, among the partners. And then there was some who said, okay, talk to me, tell me what you think. And those are the guys we'd hire back over and over again and watch their work grow over the years. So it doesn't happen without qualified, constructive, expert criticism. But all those qualifiers are important.
They are important.
Well, that's a culture.
Yeah.
It's a culture.
Yeah, that's
you see
right.
that occasionally.
Right.
Monday Night Magic has it. Illusions in Indianapolis used to have it with Mike Close and Chris Kenner and Homer Leewagon.
Yeah,
they would go away and work on something.
I worked there for the first year and a half.
That you guys would go away and work on something and they'd just frost the other person. But then when you're done, here, let me think.
What do you think? Yeah, exactly.
Let me show you what I'm doing.
Exactly.
And the Long Beach Mystics, as we had that.
Adam Rubin, we were standing in the hallway with a few friends last night after the show, and he was... We all know each other, and he was, so what do you think, this and that? I thought I did this wrong. And, well, I think here's an idea. One guy talking about the script, one guy was talking about the mechanism, and that's how you get better.
That's the culture.
That's how you get better.
Well, that's what the community is about, and that's what you're talking about Magic Live and trying to build that community.
How do you create that in a 1,600-person convention? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what they have an interesting thing here going, and that's that bar in that area up front.
Right.
And
yes.
There are pockets of people that have been coming here many years.
Right.
And that you're comfortable with. And like you say, you're comfortable to offer criticism because you're... It's not only just receiving it, mm-hmm. it's offering
that's
it,
right.
like you said.
And
so that's that culture.
It's a laboratory, and that's the laboratory that Vernon created when he went to the castle.
Sure. He sort of created that around him wherever he went.
Well, that's true, wherever he went, because the center of magic in America was wherever Vernon was.
Yeah, there
the
was.
Literally, the center of magic moved from New York to... California when Vernon moved.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Do you think people are more open to taking criticism if it's coming from a friend versus someone who isn't?
I don't know, but I think it's often a mistake. I think people look to their friends, and I think the person you want to get criticism from is the person who scares you. I mean, that's the truth of the matter is, in my early professional years, I saw Penn and Teller in 1985. Well, I'd seen something years before, but in 1985 when I saw them on Off-Broadway, and I was doing magic full-time in D.C., and I looked at what they did, and I said, this is some of the best work I've ever seen in my life, and that guy scares me. I want to go talk to him. And that's what started my friendship with Penn Jillette, was because I thought what he was doing was so intimidating and close
that's
to
amazing.
Things that
most
I'm interested in.
Most people would want to stay away from somebody who's scared.
Yeah, I ran towards it like a moth to the flame, because here's somebody who knows some stuff that I don't know. Here's somebody who's better than me, knows something more than me about something I'm really interested in. And I think that's part of it. I think all too often I see situations where people collaborate with people who know less than them, right? And that's not how you improve your work. You improve your work and your life, by the way, by surrounding yourself with people who are as good or better than you.
Right.
In the larger sense of the world. As I get older, the best advice I've come around to thinking I can offer younger people is get rid of the dead weight in your life and surround yourself with good people. Surround yourself with excellence.
Are you inviting people to come to you? I mean, you might scare people as well, but saying, hey,
the fact of the matter is I have a career-long reputation as a mentor, you know? And there's people walking around this convention here who have learned from me and come up to me and talk to me about it, whether it's from lectures, whether it's from my books, whether it's from the card clinics I ran in the early 2000s. So the fact of the matter is I have a very strong value of giving back. When I'm lecturing, I'm giving back to my mentors. I write about my mentors a lot. I've written a lot about the people who influenced me, from Lou Tannen to Earl Presto Johnson, Vernon, Johnny Thompson, on and on. And, you know, I didn't get to wherever I am in a vacuum.
You can't blame them for where you're
at. No,
I
blame you.
Fair. Okay,
Stan
that's
Allen,
good.
I blame you.
Yeah, God, I'd say that's fair. That's fair.
So, are you more of a Vernon than a Marlowe guy then, or do you
think the comparison is inappropriate? You know, Bruce Servant once said to me, I was joking with Bruce because he was explaining a trick and he called off a couple of Marlowe moves. And I said, oh, so you're using that Marlowe stuff. And he knew, I was joking, of course, we all do. And he said, you know, but he said a very serious thing to me. He said, you know what? He said, Marlowe was the guy in the laboratory in a white lab coat.
Yeah.
And Vernon took some of that chemistry and went out and used it in the world.
Oh.
It's two different things.
Good
it's
way.
Really,
okay.
it's
that.
To me, it's apples and oranges. And Marlowe contributed tremendous technical advances, mostly technical, not theatrical. in magic, but to compare and invaluable, and we all use some of these things, but to compare it to Vernon, who was a transformative visionary and artist who literally affected the art of magic, of 20th century magic, doesn't exist without him. You know, it's two different things. It's just two different things.
Yeah. No, I was, and one last thing then, too. Day or die?
Well, I never felt comfortable being that informal with him. So it was Professor. I called him Professor. But as I understand the history, it changed with the coasts.
That's what I heard.
And you know what Vernon's answer to that question was. Either or either.
Listen, thanks guys very much. Appreciate
a pleasure.
It a lot.
Yeah,
pleasure.
A pleasure.
Yep. Wait a minute. I got to leave because he's going to say something.
For the Magic Board Podcast, that was Jamie and Swiss and Stan Allen. This is Scotty out.
Well, that was enlightening and pretty enjoyable. I got some good information out of that, and I hope that you did too. It's an important thing there. I kind of like what Jamie had to say in saying that you need to go out and seek a critic, someone perhaps that might scare you, because that might be your best critic. Anyhow, good stuff in there. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate that. Well, next up, we have a late-night conversation with Tom Gagnon, and I enjoy talking with him and hearing some of the stories about some of his friends that he had worked with. He is an illustrator as well as a creator of a lot of really great effects. And it's a nice conversation, and I think that you will get something out of this then as well. So please welcome my next guest, Tom Gagnon, here on the Magic Court.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Court Podcast.com, and I'm here with Tom Gagnon tonight at the Magi Fest, and I want to say hello, Tom. Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, buddy? Everything all right with you?
It's fantastic, and it's always good to see you. It's always good. You know, I remember in previous years where you have sat in there in the sessions, and you have just entertained people, not just entertained you, but you shared sessions. I mean, you're like sessioning all night with these guys, 11, 12 years old. I mean, you know, you teach people. You are an amazing person to help other magicians to become better magicians.
No, I enjoy that.
Why do you enjoy that? What is it about that that makes you want to do that?
Well, I mean, I spend a lot of time creating original techniques. It's fun to share them.
Yep.
Pass them on.
And you have done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
What is perhaps one of your most important things that you have that you would say that you would like to pass on?
Without doubt, the guiding spread control is probably the best.
The what?
Guiding spread control. It's in my book.
Okay. And your book is called what?
Avant Cards.
Avant Cards.
Avant Cards.
Yep.
Yeah, and Too Hot for the Devil is the other one.
And with that, you teach these other guys how to do some of the tricks that are from those books?
I do. You know, I illustrate books. I've done 22 books.
Right.
And David Malik just wrote a book on bottom dealing. He's not released it yet, but it's untitled, but I did 16 drawings for that, which is coming out pretty soon.
Do you see yourself more as an artist than you do as a performer or an originator?
No. It's a balance. You know, the new book I'm working on is 416 pages already.
Wow.
1,000 illustrations.
It's been 1,000 illustrations? And you written them all, you've drawn them all.
Yeah, I drew them all, and I wrote all the text, created all the material. There's new table passes in there, and a whole section on paperclip magic with cards. It's just different stuff. So,
what is your newest thing that you would recommend?
Well, it's not in print yet. It's paperclip stuff with cards. So that will be in the new book.
And that's available when and where?
Not sure yet. Rockabomber's doing a one-man issue.
I love John. John for a long time?
I've known him for a long time, 30, 40 years.
Back in New Orleans, way back when. Did you
live
in New Orleans?
Did I ever go there?
No, did you live there?
No. But John had a conference, the Marlowe Conference there a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I attended that, and there was a lot of guys from Chicago.
Were you a Marlowe person who hung out with him?
No. I spent time with Marlowe, but I didn't hang out with him.
Okay.
No.
You hung out with John.
Didn't hang out with him either. I had the
really?
disadvantage of living in Indiana, which is isolated from all these guys.
Yeah.
And I worked in a factory. I was a union rep. I worked a lot of overtime, so I didn't get out and about much. But when I illustrated the Vernon Chronicles and the class of Magic of Larry Jennings, I didn't meet them very often either. It was all done through the mail and on the phone.
And so how did you do that? I mean, that's amazing. I mean, they would say, here's what we want you to draw?
Or? Well, Steve Mintz would send me a manuscript. I would read it.
Was it a video? Or?
No, they sent me video and pre-illustrated photographs. And then I would draw them. Submit the drawings, they would edit those and say, well, you need to move that finger here, the thumb over here. Then I'd modify the illustrations and send them back to the corrected one. And then, you know, the illustrator is always the last guy. The writer, yeah. The writer writes the book, the material's already put in, the editing's done, and they're waiting on you to make money. You're holding up the project.
You're holding it up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Have you ever worked with... Richard Kaufman?
Not directly, no. No, I was asked to illustrate the apocalypse when Richard bowed out, and Lorraine asked me to illustrate it, but he wanted to pay me a small amount of money for the cover and to do the illustrations, and of course, the cover has to be different every month.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
So... You have to be real creative on that, and I didn't want to get into that. That's a lot of pressure trying to create a new cover every month.
That's so, a good point, yeah.
I just bowed out on that issue.
Yeah.
You know.
What's Harry like? Have you spent a lot of time with Harry and Lorraine?
No, I haven't spent a lot of time with him either. I met him at the very first close-up convention at Abbott's. He was a guest. And I've known Harry on and off. I met him in St. Louis. But then I've never spent a lot of time with him, no. I asked him to write a book for me.
Really?
Yeah, he wanted a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money.
And you said, no, I don't think so.
No, what I told him was, I'll swap your labor.
Okay.
I'll illustrate a couple books for you.
Yeah.
And you can write one book for me. And he said, nope, money. He wanted money.
Now, did you go to graphics college or something?
No, I was a major art major in high school. But then Harry says, I can't do your material. I sent him videotapes on what I wanted written. He calls me on the phone and says, I can't do this stuff. And if I write a book, I need to be able to do the material.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it, right.
No, he had some bad thumb going on and, you know, different issues with the hands. So we didn't do anything. We didn't work it out.
Didn't work out.
Yeah, didn't yep. work out. No.
That's too bad. You know, he's a nice guy, but
wonderful guy.
Yep. And so, as far as what you were starting to illustrate, you decided to go in a different direction. So, what are you doing as far as are you still writing? Or
no, I'm retired now from Chrysler, and I've written. I wrote. Actually, Too Hot for the Devil. Yeah, and that's a bigger book of mine. And then another book is Avant Cards, which I co-authored with Wesley James.
I love Wesley. Man, yeah. He's really good.
Well, he got occupied during the project, and I had to finish it up. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
And I finished writing it up. So you can see the terminology changes. In the book, From Tom Does This to I Do This.
Okay.
You can see it in the book.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
And so I got into illustrating.
And the name of that book is called what?
Avant Cards.
Avant Cards, okay.
Yeah, and I got into illustrating by accident. Obi O'Brien saw a couple of illustrations I did for Bob Chesbro. I did a book for him called The Technician.
Mm-hmm.
As a favor, just to see how I do. And I was an art major in high school and won an award as one of the top graphic artist illustrators in high school in Michigan.
And you're from Michigan.
Yeah. And so I did Bob's book. Obi O'Brien saw it. He asked me to draw Fork Full of Appetizers. And I drew that. He Never wanted had. Another volume of that. I did that. And then the Vernon Chronicles, actually J.C. Wagner book came next.
That's a great book. I've got that book, too.
And then Larry
Jennings. You did all the illustrations of that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then Larry Jennings, I did that book. Classic Magical Larry Jennings. And then I did the Vernon Chronicles. Yeah.
Were you a friend of Vernon's and Larry's? Or how did that come about?
I didn't spend a lot of time with Larry, but I met the professor three or four times, but didn't know him very well. Most of my contacts with Vernon came through Harry Reiser.
Harry's a great guy. Yeah.
He was, yeah.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He lived in Indianapolis, which was 35, 40 minutes from me. And when Vernon came to town, or Slidini or something, Harry would invite me down. I'd get to meet him and spend time with him. So I didn't really know Vernon very well. Admired him, did a lot of his card magic, did a lot of Harry Lorraine. I started off doing actually Harry Lorraine first, and then I got into Vernon, and then I got into Marlowe in that order.
Okay.
Yeah.
How was Marlowe? What was he like?
Very, very good. Excellent. I mean, his sleights were flawless. Didn't meet him very often either. First time
really?
I met him was at the Palladium restaurant in Chicago. My wife and I went to have dinner. I wanted to meet him. Went in, sat down. There was about 10 guys sitting at a big long table. Simon Aronson and all those guys. They were all sessioning, and Marlowe was sitting at the end of the table. I went up and shook his hand and introduced myself to him. And at the time, I had a version of Open Travelers in the card corner of the Lincoln Ring.
Right.
I reached out and shook his hand. I said, "Hi, I'm Tom Guinan." He goes, "Oh, yeah. You're the one that put that version of the Open Travelers in the Lincoln Ring." And I go, "That's me." And I talked to Ed on the phone a lot.
You did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I didn't. I had a job and kids to raise at a union position.
Yeah.
I couldn't just.
Where'd you work at the time? You were at
Chrysler?
Yeah.
And I couldn't just hobnob and run off because my constituents would say, "Yeah, not here. Oops. He's not here again." You have to beat that out.
Yeah, I will.
"He's not here again. Where's he at? I think I'll run against him. I'll beat him in the next election." So you kind of guard those kind of jobs. They pay a lot of money.
Sure.
And so I didn't run off and spend time at the castle with Marlowe or any of them guys. I had a family.
Right.
To raise.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So. Right. And so you ended up doing some magic for them.
I used to do close-up magic in Kokomo where I lived at different restaurants and a couple bars and stuff. And then eventually I became a magician's magician. I got more gratification out of fooling magicians than laymen.
You felt better back then about that?
Yeah, creative-wise.
Okay.
In those days, I was a coin guy, and I had the Stars of Magic. I had a routine in the Stars of Magic called Radical Rebound, and coins bored me. Back then, there was only Spellbound, coins to the table, coins across.
Right.
Standard,
some basic
things,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That we see now, right.
But then I got into cards, and it goes, "Oh, look at this. This is interesting. Oh, I like this. Oh." And I got more creativity out of that, more satisfaction out of pursuing the plots and the slights. And that's when I gave up coin magic and went straight into cards.
Cards, right.
Never went back, no.
Never went back?
No. Never picked up coins again.
And so it was cards only from then on. So what is one of your favorite card effects?
Well, that's hard to say. It depends on the
like
slight.
It's like a baby, you know. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I
come
slight.
You come up with all kinds of ideas.
Usually I create a slight, and then I figure out what I can do with it.
Right.
You know, the table pass, that's one of my gems.
The table pass?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's like C. Forte kind of a thing.
Yeah, I'm a friend of Steve's, but I my pass is more along the lines of magic because it's not done as a gambling move. It's based on a gambling move. It's
that's
based
what
on,
I'm trying to say, a gambling
yeah,
move.
Yeah, it's right. Based on a gambling move. It was based on an old table hop that John Scarn made famous. And I converted it into a ribbon spread with a pass and technique.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's in the book.
It's in the book, which is called what?
Avant Cards.
Cards.
No, Avant. A-V-A-N-T.
Avant Cards.
Dash Cards.
Is that still available?
Sure, I got them right here with me.
Is that available in a PDF?
No, never do that.
What do you think about that?
I think it's horrible.
Why?
Too much piracy.
That's a good point. I agree with you.
Both my books were knocked
wholeheartedly,
off.
Wholeheartedly, I agree with you.
Yeah, both my books were knocked off within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
There's a torrent. Chinese knocked it off.
Yep.
And you can't spend 5 years writing a book, illustrating it, putting money in it, laying it out.
You spend so
money
much time. It's your baby.
To print it, you know, and you have them delivered to your home on crates, you know, skids, and you market them, advertise them, and then some jerk in China sells that as a PDF for $3.
Right. Or less.
Yeah.
It's like free.
Yeah.
Kind of a torrent.
Right. They took my downloads, made them available for like 65 cents. What can you do?
You can't.
I threatened to sue them, but... They laugh at you.
Yeah, you can't find it.
No.
So what's one of your favorite effects that you love to do whenever that you are performing?
I like transpositions. I work on some of them.
Like a top change kind of thing?
No, where cards trade places, that kind of thing.
Okay.
No, I have different techniques that nobody else does.
What is that, for example? Like what?
Well, I mean, I could demonstrate some for you. I mean...
We're not video, so...
No, I know that, but... I invent... The Guardian Spread Control does a lot of things that other controls and other moves don't accomplish. Mm-hmm. And I created a lot of different effects, transpositions, where cards trade places using ribbon spreads. That's my forte, ribbon spreads. That's...
You know, that's one of the things this evening that Howard Hamburg was talking about, how that you could do some sort of a jog. And how are you with jogs? Do you use a jog a lot for ribbon spreads?
Some. Yeah, I get maybe 6 or 7 different techniques for jogs and stuff where I can go into ribbon spread techniques. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not my favorite tool.
What's your favorite?
I still like the Guiding Spread Control because it's versatile. I can force with it. I can switch with it. I can switch 4 for 4 with it. I can switch 4 face-up cards for 4 face-up other cards. I can do a color-changing deck with it. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that it branched out into.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, wow. That's my favorite tool.
So what other books have you actually illustrated for?
Oh, I did one for Ken Krenzel. Did one for Harvey
Rosenthal. Kinsel,
he died.
He died, didn't he?
Yeah. I did one for Harvey Rosenthal. Two Forkful of Appetizer books.
Forkful,
yeah. Yeah, the Jennings book. The J.C. Wagner book. My two of my books.
I love your books. I've got both of them.
Oh, do you?
I do.
Well, there's a whole list on my website of books I illustrated.
What's your website?
So many. It's TomGagnonMagic.com.
And that's GAGNON.
Yes, sir. Yep. And then YouTube, there's a channel. I've got 26 ribbon spread techniques demonstrated on there. They're all ribbon spread techniques. And it's Tom Gagnon 1116. That's my house number.
1116. That's your house number?
Yeah.
That's your address?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
Kokomo, Indiana.
1116.
South Cortland, Indiana.
So if people want to contact you, how will they email you?
There's Thomas_Gagnon_381@comcast.net.
Okay.
There's another one. It's TomGagnonMagic@gmail.com.
Okay, that's GAGNON.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever worked with David Blaine or some of these other guys?
No.
No.
I know Bill Kalush real well, but
yeah.
I've never been asked to work with those guys.
What have you done with Bill Kalush? Have you worked with their conjurers?
No. He used to have a card conference every year in New York City. And it was an invitational, and there'd be like 35, 40 guys from around the world were invited to participate. And it was like a Escorial in Spain. He gave specific subjects that you studied all year, and then when you got there, you would present them. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was an uncommon to sit at a table with Ricky Jay on one side and Leonard Green and Starenko and Elmsley. All and these people were all at the same table with me.
Amazing.
One day, and Krenzel was there at the same table, and just all these different card guys. And I'm not bashful. I did stuff for him.
What was Starenko like? I mean, I've got some of his stuff, and I know he was, of course,
he recluse.
Okay.
He was there to bitch about Marlowe. That was basically
bitch about Marlowe, really?
Yeah, well, yeah, because according to history, the estimation that Marlowe put out, the book on estimation, actually was Starenko's. He sent a manuscript to Jay Marshall to put it. That's just rumor. I don't know if it's true.
Okay.
And then what happened was Ed Marlowe used to do the proofreading on the books coming through Magic Incorporated on cards, and he proofread that estimation. Mm-hmm. And then that led to estimation, his book on estimation.
Okay.
Starenko felt like he got robbed. He dropped out of card magic for many, many years.
I remember he really kind of dropped out of magic altogether.
He really didn't. He did magic as a hobby by himself and practiced and played with it. And then when Kalush had his conference there, one of the subjects was estimation, so he brought Starenko in. And that's all he wanted to do is bitch about Marlowe. I mean, you know, about how he ripped him off and you know, he didn't. And people, you know, of course he's a well-known illustrator, you know, for Marvel comic books.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just had his book, Starenko on Cards, and I took it with me to one of the conferences, and I had him sign it to my grandson, Billy, who was only three, and I thought he'd follow my footsteps to do magic, right, which he didn't.
And, what's he doing now?
Now, well, he works for Amazon.
Okay. So that's not a bad...
No, not a bad gig. So he signed it, but he also drew the shadow in the cover, mm-hmm, which he did all the covers for the
with
shadow.
Walter Gibson.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so he... I gave it to Bill Malone about a month, maybe 6 months ago. I mailed it to him. Mm-hmm. Said, Bill, it's got your name in it. Right?
Yeah. Definitely.
So I sent it to Bill as a gift.
Yeah. I love Bill.
Yeah, I love
him. Have you worked with Bill very much?
No. Know him real well. Spent a lot of time with him. Recently, when I went to Vegas, when I did the Magic Live convention, I worked that. And Malone and Steve Forte picked me up, and Randy Wakeman, to go out and have dinner. And we went out and had dinner, and I lost my camera. I just bought it. It's a brand new Canon.
Oh, bummer. Yeah.
Lost Holy it. Cow. Don't know what I did with it. We got out and had dinner, and I looked
never
around and
found
says,
it?
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay.
I couldn't find it. I flew home. 2 months later, I'm sitting there, and I thought, you know what? We never did look under his front seat on the passenger side.
Yeah.
It was his car, you know, a big Escalade. So I called up Steve Forte and said, hey, do me a favor. Go out and look underneath the seat. So he sent his wife out. And she checked it out, and there it was under the front seat.
She found it.
Yeah, so he took a picture of him wearing my camera around his neck. Emailed it to me, and then he sent it back to me.
Did you ever work over in his place when he had that down in Boca Raton?
No, I didn't know him back then.
Yeah, Bill is a great guy. I love Bill.
Oh, and I knew him back then. I just didn't, you know, I never had anything to do with Boca Raton. Never went down there.
Right.
I've known Bill since his days in Chicago.
Yep.
When he used to work the bars there, that's when I first met him. He's one of the top guys in the world. Entertainment-wise, jobs-wise, he's funny, he's entertaining. He's
got it all.
Top dog, one of them. I mean, he's not as good as Steve Forte, but my God, he's not too far behind.
Well, Steve Forte's completely different. I mean, Stevie's is a different kind of guy where he is looking at the casinos and trying to see how they're
not
cheating.
Not anymore. Now he's got a new book coming out on card magic.
Steve Forte
does? Yeah.
I've got his big green
book. No, this is on card magic for magicians.
Oh. When's that coming out?
They said first of the year, and it
He's
ain't
publishing
out yet.
It.
He is self-publishing.
Oh, self-publishing, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's card magic is what it is. Mm-hmm. And every time I've seen him, he's done card magic that wasn't gambling, that was sensational.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff.
There was another guy. Remember at Magic Live, Tom, that there was another fella who was with Bill and and C40, and I can't remember the fellow's name who was on stage with him, and he was also one of these fellows.
Ron Conley.
It was Ron, yes. Exactly.
Ron Conley, Ron, yeah.
I talked with Ron, and I was trying to get him on the podcast, and he was saying, you know, we talked for an hour. I said, can I turn on the microphone? He said, no, you know, I'd rather not, and he's just kind of a more humble guy, and he's a wonderful guy. He's got a lot of stories.
Oh, Lord, is he ever. Now, he just did Danny Bach's convention about 4 years ago. And he brought in, they put up a big screen TV, and he had all these videos from the old days when they did the Eye in the Sky. That's what
Sure.
And they used to have nothing but a...
In Vegas.
Yeah, they didn't have the cameras like they have now. Back then, they had just a grating and a catwalk above the ceiling, and they'd walk by and just shoot a camera through the holes.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a bunch of these where guys were doing card mucks and drunks that were doing deck switches that came out face up instead of face down, and guys doing holdout stuff and their shirt, working a shirt.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it's a slot in a shirt. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do know.
Okay, then a guy switched a card, and he looked at it, wrong one. He goes in and pulls a different one out.
Yeah,
they're drunk. They're drunk. You know.
Yep.
So Ron is a kind of a quiet guy.
He is very.
Very
unassuming.
I got with him at Magic Live about 4 years ago. The C40 and me and about 50 other guys went out to a restaurant, and I hustled him into the back room where I could get their full attention. And I did stuff for Steve for a couple hours. He didn't do anything. He just watched and had a good time. And Ron was there, and Ron can handle cards, believe me. Not like Steve. Nobody handles cards like Steve. He's one of a kind. He's probably 60 years old now, so he's probably not as sharp as he used to be. I don't know. When I saw him in Vegas at Magic Live this year, we went out for dinner. He didn't touch the cards. I did. I had some stuff I wanted to show him, you know. I'm one of the few guys that he'll break away because I'm so different. And I don't show him the rag, you know, the same shit every time.
Yeah. So, now, do you ever go to Las Vegas and kind of bust these guys? I mean, the way Steve and Ron would?
No.
You're not do that?
No. I'm just a magician.
Just a magician?
Yeah.
You are a great magician.
Not a gambler type guy. Although I've invented moves that can be used at the gaming table, I don't... I'm not interested in gambling. When I go there, I keep my money.
Okay.
And I know better. My wife used to love to gamble. We go to Vegas, and she'd play the slots, and I'd feed her money till she ran out. Or I'd run out, right?
You one or the other, yeah.
Yeah. And two of us can't gamble.
Yeah.
You know, you go broke.
Yeah.
So she loved the slots, and I loved watching her play. So I just sit there and give her money till, we go out and eat and go to restaurants and stuff. One thing about going to conventions, my wife and I went to conventions for about, I lost her 6 years ago, but we were married 42 years. Her name was Carol.
My wife and I were almost married 43. She's passed this last year.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember seeing that. Yeah. Now, how did you lose your wife? What was that?
Brain cancer.
I lost mine to aneurysm. Hmm. And so.
How fast did she go?
A surgery.
Really?
I had
another 13 months of my wife.
Well, I didn't have anything. She went for surgery to correct the aneurysm and didn't come out of surgery. She died.
Yeah.
You know,
club you belong with me and Howard Hamburg and some of these other guys.
Yeah. So I'm she was a doll collector and we spent a lot of time at conventions, but I never was the kind of person that spent all the time at the convention. I'd always split it. We'd go to antique malls and look for dolls and go to restaurants, and we'd spend all day shopping at different places, antiquing. Mm-hmm. And then when we were done, we'd come back to the hotel. She would go up to the room and do her nails and read and watch TV. And then I'd come down and do magic.
Yeah.
You know. So I split it with her.
You're my brother.
Yeah, I split it with her. I could not hog. I couldn't drop her off at the front door and just do magic the whole time. It was ignorant to do that.
That's right.
Especially when you love somebody, you know.
Exactly.
And so... I'm 42 years. Yeah, it's tough. You know how it is. I haven't gotten it. I haven't even touched her clothes. Everything is still there.
I mean, my closet too.
Her dolls are still there.
Yeah.
Her Her collectibles are all still there.
I don't know what to do yet.
I'm not quite sure. I invited the kids over, the daughters.
Yeah.
The first thing I did
and ask them if they want to take anything. And
I broke up the jewelry.
Yeah.
You take the diamond rings, you take the diamond earrings.
Exactly, I did that.
I had a lot of bling bling she bought over the years.
Yeah.
It's still there, a lot of it.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to come in and take it either. They felt guilty about it. But the dolls, I broke up those a little bit. I boxed up 12 containers, big giant containers, and I gave them to my great-granddaughter. Who we sealed them up. She's not allowed to open them up until she's 16. And the rest of them are just in all around the house. There's doll furniture, and closets are full of them, and there's an attic full of them. I can't touch them.
Yeah, I understand.
Yep.
Yeah, I've got the same thing, too. So as far as what your future is going to be, I mean, are you thinking about, I mean, obviously you and me moving on with our lives, are you illustrating more books? Or
no. The answer to that is really I don't know. I'm doing I promised Randy Wakeman years ago I'd do a book for him.
Love Randy.
Good friend. One of the best I've got. I had a party in my backyard two summers ago, a pool party. I invited 16 different card guys from around Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan and stuff. Fed them Amish cooking. They came in and spent 3 days. I put four of them up. Howard flew in. Hamburg,
yeah.
Yeah, and I booked it for a lecture in Indianapolis, so we got some of his airfare back. And we had a blast.
John Rockerbomber is a good buddy of yours.
We corresponded some, you know, and spent time on the phone and stuff. But he's another one that was elusive. You know, I had certain friends that I spent time with that I gravitated toward back in Indiana. Remember, I had a very exclusive job as a union rep with Chrysler. And so I didn't spend a lot of time jumping on planes and running out to Vegas and stuff. I did fly out once, twice to the castle and went out to Servant's house and spent time with him. Randy and I did.
I like Bruce Servant. He was a nice fellow.
He was, yeah. But you know, I've always entertained myself. And I can sit down with a deck of cards at 10 o'clock in the morning. Next thing you know, it's 10 o'clock at night. And I'm, you know, videotaping stuff. I come up with something, an idea. You know, I created something last night before I came. And I had to write it down, because if I don't write it down at this age, man, I'll never forget it.
So you come up with new ideas all the time?
Oh, yeah, the whole book is full of all new stuff.
Wow.
Just new.
I mean, at your age of what, 37?
73.
Yeah. Okay, I'm dyslexic.
I got you.
Yeah. You're still coming with new ideas.
Yeah, but Randy's next on the list. He wants to lecture in Paris. They want me to lecture in Paris. I just lectured in Austria. Howard and I did. We did a dual lecture, and that was fun. And then we went over to Glasgow and spent time with Roy Walton. It was royalty. They all showed up.
Yeah.
You know, it was a knocked out by the fellows and the magic they did and the hospitality they gave us. And then we went over, of course, we did Escurial. And
Juan.
Yeah. And the guys in Paris are wanting me there, Bernard Gillis and Jean-Jacques Sandvert, Juan is over there. And Howard wants to go over and do a dual lecture kind of thing. And then Randy does. Randy's and I have been planning this for, I don't know, 8-10 years of doing this, but Randy wants to do 8-10 lectures, and I don't want to do that. I want to do one.
Only one, okay.
Do only one. I just don't want to do Paris.
Well, Paris is nice, yeah.
Get part of my airfare back, and then I'm on my way home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's what. And I promised him I'd illustrate a book for him, so he's next on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I got enough for another book after this one.
That's great. And so, do you have a title for the next book?
This next book? Maybe. Right now it's tentatively Ghanian Unfiltered.
That's the working title.
Yeah, Ghanian Unfiltered.
I like that.
It's not going to change.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, I tell you what, we've spent some time, and I appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
You're such a good friend, and I enjoy time with you.
I want to sit down and show you some stuff.
We'll do that. But I want to ask you, because my podcast is called The Magic Word, what is your magic word? What's your philosophy of life? What do you live by? What's important to you? What do you...
Family.
Family.
That's oh, yeah. Family. Yeah.
It comes immediately to mind. Family.
Yeah. My grandkids, great-grandkids. I've got, you know...
Great-grandkids.
I've got a grandson breaking into the movies. He's getting ready to cut his first movie. And I got a, I got all my grandkids' jobs at Chrysler.
Yes.
I had so much stroke with management and people in the union that when they were hiring, I went into the union office, president's office, and says, I know you're hiring. You got some referrals. I want my granddaughter. She's on.
She's on.
Oh, yeah. They're the best paying jobs in Indiana.
People. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I was in office 10 years.
Okay.
So I knew all the past presidents, the current presidents, all the guys under me that were stewards became committeemen above me because I didn't want to move up. I liked working on the shop floor.
You were satisfied where you were
I
the
did,
shop.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of the stuff I created, I was on company time.
Now you're retired and you're just doing magic.
I've been out. I've been out 10 years, yeah.
You loving your life?
It's lonely.
It's lonely?
It's lonely.
Well, as we've talked about, our spouses, have, it's just you and me.
It's hard to deal with, you
it's
know.
Just
you,
individual.
You look around at all the memories you got in the house
exactly.
and all the things
we're
you bought together.
For what we had.
Absolutely.
But we have such good friends like you and me. I mean, there's so many people that are around that we I like hanging out with people. And that's what really moves
yeah,
me forward.
Yeah, my phone rings all the time. And
yeah, mine too.
And I see, and I talk to a lot of magicians that are friends that... You know, friends like Victor Bucco and...
Love Vic.
Yeah, well, he's fabulous. He's one of the best magicians that I know.
He is.
Harrison Carroll's another
too.
One.
Oh,
yeah,
I love Harrison. Yep.
Yeah, my friend Gary McCoy, he lives 30 miles from me. And he comes over once every couple of weeks, and I take him out for dinner, and we session, and borrows a few books. I've been helping him build his library up because his library got destroyed in a hurricane years ago in Texas. And so I've been, I think he's got 85 books now. I went through and stripped all of my dupes because
okay.
I was buying paperbacks.
Gave them to him.
Yeah, gave them to him. And then I had a friend and guy I met at Magic Live. He was a minister. He boxed up two boxes and mailed them to me. I gave them to Gary. And
Gary Plant?
No. Gary McCoy.
McCoy, sorry.
Yeah. No, Gary Plant is here.
Gary is here somewhere.
I told him I had a card punch to show him because he posted about 10 of them.
He did recently, yeah, on Facebook.
Yeah. So I brought one he doesn't have.
You got one he doesn't have.
No, I got a card punch with me. He didn't show on that page that a guy named Jim Reiser made.
I know Jim.
Do you?
Go
okay.
On. Of course.
Yeah.
Good. Well, listen, Tom, thank you very much. You are the best.
Ah,
I love you.
Cut it
appreciate
out.
Your time. This
my
has been
pleasure.
Great.
Have fun with it.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Tom Gagnon. This is Scotty.
It's pronounced Gagnon.
Gagnon.
There you go.
Got it.
You know, sometimes we just don't see each other often enough, so this way, I've forgotten how to pronounce his name properly. It's Gagnon, not Gagnon, because it's G-A-G-N-O-N. And anyhow, Gagnon, so I apologize for that, Tom. And that was a lot of fun. Thanks very much for sharing a lot of things that you did right there. So appreciate that, and also the conversation we'd had earlier then with Jamie and with Stan. Well, now it's time for just at least one review from a trick that's available from Murphy's Magic Supplies. These are available from your favorite magic dealer, and this particular one that I'm going to be talking about is also produced by Vanishing Ink. And that, of course, is Joshua J. and Andy Gladwin's company. And this also is something that, of course, they were the ones who sponsored the Magi Fest. And moreover, the review I'm going to be giving is for Card on Ceiling by Jamie and Swiss, who we just heard, who was also there at Magi Fest. See how this all comes together? Anyhow, the point is that we're running kind of short on time, and we had a pretty full episode with three different people we spoke to in these two podcasts, so we'll just keep this to one review. And again, this is a DVD of Card on Ceiling. And just as we had three people who we talked to here on the podcast, this DVD is a combination of three different people. There are three different methods of doing a card on ceiling, two of which actually use a thumbtack and the deck of cards and a borrowed bill or several borrowed bills that then you combine and put together for a 100 or 50 or whatever. But the point is that one is by J.C. Wagner. The other one is Scotty York. One does not require any gimmick. The other one does, which is an easy thing that you can make. And the third and final one is Jamie and Swiss's idea of the traditional method. But he has a self-contained way of carrying around the necessary something that you always need in order to get this to stick to the ceiling without using a thumbtack that is quite clever, something that I've not seen. And he gives two or three different ways of how to self-contain this. And it's, as I said, very clever and something I'd recommend. Not only does he teach these three different methods, again, his and J.C. Wagner's and Scotty York's, but also he begins by giving the complete history of the card on the ceiling, kind of where it came from, those who have continued to work and improve on it over the years, and to where it is then now. This is a traditional thing that is something that's quite memorable. In fact, there are so many people who have made reputations of this, such as Doc Eason and Michael Amar, you know, Scotty York and J.C. Wagner and others, certainly have, and Bob Sheets. That is something that stays up there for such a long time. Depending upon how high the ceiling is, it's amazing. And also, it's a good way, perhaps, of getting tips if you want to use that for the with the one variation with the two variations using the thumbtack. One of them in which that's, again, the idea is that you have a card selected. You then have a bill which is, a card is selected, returned to the deck, rubber bands are wrapped around it. You put a thumbtack underneath the rubber band. You wrap the bill around the deck, and then when you throw it up, then the bill is stuck to the ceiling with a card, actually the, between the ceiling and the card, with the thumbtack going all the way through that, and the deck comes down, you catch it. That's one method. And then the other one, that's Scotty, that's J.C. Wagner's. And Scotty York's idea then is where that you have a deck of the card which is selected, a rubber band is wrapped around that, the bill goes around it, you then have separately a thumbtack which simultaneously is thrown up to the ceiling. Either you can have the bartender to help you or that you can do it yourself. Essentially, that what happens is the same result, that is that there is a bill that is attached to the ceiling with a card underneath it that has the signed card that you can see with the thumbtack going all the way through. So it looks like you just threw up the thumbtack along with the deck and the bill, and it stuck like that, and it is amazing, and perhaps has a even greater impact. And then one that, again, that Jamie and Swiss teaches is one which, again, is their traditional method, in which that you have a card selected, and it is stuck to the ceiling. And his what he is bringing to the table on this is the method, which is the self-contained card on ceiling gimmick that he teaches you how to make, that we all have and we can do. So again, it is something that I recommend from start to finish. Complete and thorough explanation, well-produced product and DVD, as you would expect, nothing less from Vanishing Ink. And again, this is something that is available from your favorite magic dealer that comes to us from Murphy's Magic Supplies. Well, I think that's going to be pretty much a wrap here for this week, and I want to remind everybody that if you have not yet signed up for the newsletter, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there'll be a pop-up there that'll come on to the website, and you can sign up for the newsletter there. And it's just a weekly thing where I let everybody know about who's coming on this week and who's going to be up the following week, and also a suggestion from the archives of who that you might want to go back and take another listen to. And if you have not yet liked us on Facebook, please do go to facebook.com/TheMagicWordPodcast and like our page, because I do several things that are posted there from time to time. Most importantly, to some of you, might be the box openings I do. Whenever I receive these tricks from Murphy's Magic Supplies, I do a live streaming of the video, so you can kind of see what it is, and you can actually go back and see what kinds of things that are going to be coming up later this over the next few weeks of tricks that they had sent me that you'll be hearing reviewed here on the podcast. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that the most important thing really is family. This is Scotty out.